Where is the poison? The battle of wits has begun. It ends when you decide and we both drink and find out who is right and who is dead.
But it's so simple. All I have to do is divine from what I know of you. Are you the sort of man who would put the poison into his own goblet or his enemies? Now, a clever man would put the poison into his own goblet because he would know that only a great fool would reach for what he was given. I'm not a great fool, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you. But you must have known I was not a great fool. You would have counted on it, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
You've made your decision then?
Not remotely. Because Iocane comes from Australia, as everyone knows. And Australia is entirely peopled with criminals. And criminals are used to having people not trust them, as you are not trusted by me, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you.
Truly, you have a dizzying intellect.
Wait till I get going! Where was I?
Australia.
Yes, Australia. And you must have suspected I would have known the powder's origin, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
You're just stalling now.
You'd like to think that, wouldn't you? You've beaten my giant, which means you're exceptionally strong. So you could have put the poison in your own goblet, trusting on your strength to save you, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you. But you've also bested my Spaniard, which means you must have studied. And in studying, you must have learned that man is mortal, so you would have put the poison as far from yourself as possible, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
You're trying to trick me into giving away something. It won't work.
It has worked. You've given everything away. I know where the poison is.
Then make your choice.
I will, and I choose. What in the world can that be?
What? Where? I don't see anything.
Oh, well, I could have sworn I saw something. No matter.
What's so funny?
I'll tell you in a minute. First, let's drink. Me from my glass, and you from yours.
You guessed wrong.
You only think I guessed wrong. That's what's so funny. I switched glasses when your back was turned. Ha ha, you fool. You fell victim to one of the classic blunders. The most famous is never get involved in a land war in Asia. But only slightly less well known is this. Never go in against a Sicilian when death is on the line.
Recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
Did your parents have any children that live?
Sir, yes, sir.
I bet they regret that. You're so ugly you could be a modern art masterpiece. What's your name, fat body?
Sir, Leonard Lawrence, sir.
Lawrence, what, of Arabia?
Sir, no, sir.
From now on, you're Gomer Pyle.
Sir, yes, sir.
Do you think I'm cute, Private Pyle? Do you think I'm funny?
Sir, no, sir.
Then wipe that disgusting grin off your face.
Sir, yes, sir.
Well, any fucking time, sweetheart.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
You'd like to think that, wouldn't you?
The great Wallace Shawn.
He was just in the news, wasn't he? He was, very liberal. I want to say, yeah, I mean, he was on one of the cable news shows or something recently talking about how ridiculous the teabaggers are.
Yeah, he's very progressive. He's a, I actually met him in 1996 or 7. Long story there, but just a really sweet, sweet man. Brilliant. And weird.
In your Gump-like.
Well, I like to put myself in situations where I meet people that I admire, and I've always admired. It was back when he wrote a play. He wrote a play called The Designated Mourner, and I had a lot of friends in New York in the theater biz, so I would go up there quite a lot and hang out with them, and I got... not backstage, but like the open party, and he was there, so that was neat.
Hey, you know what? It's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis Show.
Shoehorning that into the title now?
Yeah, well, they're the exclusive sponsor of the show.
Yes, they are.
And they also bought what is called a title sponsorship, where they actually, it's like old-timey television, where... you know, like the Texaco Star Theater. Well, no, it's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis Show. Or, you know, the long version would be Bubble Genius presents the Bob and Elvis Show. But verbally, it's easier to say the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis Show.
Yeah.
Brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius.
And I think it's been 48 hours since I got a package from them, so I'm really starting to worry.
Right. I came back from being away, and I had, there were just giant boxes of stuff, like a big pile of things. And I got, let's see, I got it's like a red, did you get like a flask, like a ceramic flask?
No,
I got like
I could have used that.
Yeah, with like a big cork on the top. It's like red and it's ceramic, and there's a skull painted. It's called Skellramix. I got one of those.
You can actually put your booze of choice in there.
Here's something very weird that I got from Bubble Genius. I got a soap with our faces on it.
Yeah, I got one of those too. Yeah, that is strange.
I'm debating whether or not to use that, because that might actually get...
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, that's a little... If it was just my face, that would suit my narcissism fine, but I don't know if I'm going to wash any of my private parts with your face on there. That seems a little gay.
Yeah, it seems that it cancels each other out. I mean, it just doesn't seem like... Yeah, I would use it maybe with my own face on it, as you said.
See, if I was a gay narcissist, then all would be well.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't then... be... I mean, neither of us can use these soaps because both of our faces are on them.
Yes, so, and I don't know who I would gift that to. Like, hey, wash your vagina with this soap with my face on it.
Right.
And the face of a stranger.
Yeah.
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 So that'll just sit in my collection of oddities of things that I have that are odd.
They also sent me a soap with an old-timey nude on it. A nude. And I'm trying to think, this is like Betty Grable or something. It's just some... It's like a Christmas nude from like 1945 or something.
I got a glow-in-the-dark angel soap.
I got there was like a variety of, I mean, there was like angel soaps. There was like the holiday Christmas lights soaps, like the bulbs, shaped like the old-timey bulbs. And there was I think this is new, the Ann Coulter Poodoo doll came there.
I got the Sarah Palin version 2. Poodoo doll.
Oh, the new version. What's the difference between? Is this the variant?
Yeah, the old one. This one has a much more psychotic grin.
No,
the face is different, slightly different.
Yeah, yeah. My niece looked at the Ann Coulter one and said, "Who's that guy?"
Well, true enough.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not making that up. That's exactly what she said.
She's penis.
Who's that? Who's that guy?
Yeah.
Right.
With the Adam's apple.
Yeah. And it's actually, remarkably enough, dear, it's not a guy. She says, oh, is it a witch?
Well, yeah.
That too. I guess, you know what? Never mind. Both of those things actually qualify. I think you're on the right track. And
Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Got some great specials for the new year from Bubble Genius. We'll talk about that. And speaking of narcissism, they're really stroking our massive egos. With their commercial this week.
Uh-oh.
Wait till you hear it. It's epic.
Back with a new commercial, huh?
In fact, I'm going to, during as the actual commercial break, I'll be playing the short version of their commercial. And then when we come back from the break, I'll play a little bit of the long version. Because for guys like you and I, it's like, you know, well, I mean, it's a massive ego stroke is what it is.
All right.
Hear that. So... But, you know, and also, before the show, we were making references to Star Wars, or better yet, I was. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is Red Letter Media released their Episode 3 review. Did you see it?
I did. I'd been so used to, just going to the page and looking for the review that and being disappointed that I went the other night when they posted it, and I was just about to... You know, close it, and it was there. I was like, "Oh my god!" So I watched it straight through, and it was very good.
The best joke came right after the Twinkie joke. Do you remember the one? Do you know the one I'm talking about? I think it was toward the beginning of part two.
No, I don't remember.
It was completely random. It had something it had to do. You have to watch it because there was a Twinkie joke, and then there was a joke about Plinkett's cat.
Oh right. Including
including a very disturbing visual.
Yeah, it was very disturbing.
But in terms of the actual review, once again, just dead on. And he wasn't afraid. Plinkett wasn't afraid to praise the movie where it was good.
Yeah, the things that didn't fuck up.
That's right.
Like, there was no little bitty Han Solo.
There was, and that was the best thing. And that was the other funny joke. Yeah, because you talk about, you know, they didn't rape the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. And, where would you fuck the Millennium
where
Falcon?
Where would you fuck the Millennium Falcon? Right, it shows you right there in the front, you know, between those two, like,
right
outcroppings.
Crotch.
Yeah, like those two nubs that stick out the front. And then he says, I've tried.
Or, I've done it. Yeah.
I've done it.
That was great.
I've raped the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. Yeah, it was less of an in-depth... The more in-depth review, I don't know if you've ever seen Confused Matthew, but ConfusedMatthew.com, great. This guy is a genius. He's like a philosophy major or something. He's just a really, really sharp guy, ConfusedMatthew.com. And he did a 3 or 4 part shit on Star Wars thing on episode 3. He did all 3 of the prequels. And his analysis and his review of part 3 was actually much more in-depth and interesting than Red Letter Media. But check that out, ConfusedMatthew.com. He's great.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that Plinkett covered a lot of the film analysis steps.
Not so much the mythology and the, you know, how badly Lucas fucked the whole thing up.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, what I was saying was Plinkett covered a lot of that in the episode 1 review. So he really, he set a lot of the stage for the subsequent 2 reviews in the episode 1 review. So, so I think there's a bit more filler in the subsequent 2 reviews, although much less weird, creepy serial killer stuff in the episode 3 review, which I actually found refreshing because I was like, okay, well, good. He's moved on from that. There's not so much of those.
It looked like at the end they're saving it up for like a coda or a epilogue that has the final showdown between Plinkett and the hooker.
Right.
But
there's a really good film in the middle of that. They shot something with.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was the hooker coming back for revenge against Plinkett. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Lucas had Plinkett's absolutely right when he says that and the film, the documentary footage proves this out, where Lucas just pulled the movie out of his ass. Yeah. I mean, oh, I guess I better start writing a screenplay. And everybody laughs.
Yeah.
And we're all like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What do you mean? You've had 20 years. And this is what you come up with? I mean, he just literally, he just absolutely pulled a screenplay out of his ass.
Right.
And could have done such, I mean, given that we all know what the final outcome is, you know, given that prequels are just a bad idea in general, that we all know, oh, Anakin becomes Darth Vader, oh, shocker, that he could have done so much with, you know, he could have tricked us, basically. I wanted to find out that Obi-Wan was actually Luke's father.
Yeah.
Like, the whole dark side issue was a love triangle between Padme, which is horrible, and Obi-Wan and Darth Vader. That would have made sense.
Yes.
And then, oh, surprise, Ben is Luke's dad, and that's why he's on Tatooine keeping an eye on him, because he's his dad.
Well, what drove the love story in the original trilogy, which was the love triangle between Luke, Leia, and Han?
Yeah, and that's gross. Luke and Leia were brother and sister.
Yeah, but I mean, they were kissing through the second episode.
Yeah, she's giving him a little...
Empire,
I mean, that kiss on Hoth was pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
That was not a brother-sister kiss.
Yeah.
And they still kind of... can kiss my ass when he goes, oh, well, I knew all along, but my ass you did.
Yeah.
You pulled that completely out of your bung in episode in Jedi.
No, you know what? They didn't... Yoda said there was another in Empire.
Well, maybe he didn't know who the hell he was talking... That kiss was wrong. That was a wrong kiss.
Yeah.
For brother and sister.
Yeah. And especially,
kissed him on the forehead or something on his face scars.
Yeah, and Luke was all like hamburger at that point, which is kind of gross too. Yeah, it's like
really
kissing Two-Face, you know, in the hospital.
That's why they had to throw that ice creature in there. What's that thing called? The Wampa.
The Wampa, yes.
Wampa.
Yeah.
That's why they had to do that, to cover up his face.
Yeah, and then
why his face is all fucked up.
And then they had to stick him in the Bacta tank. Right?
Oh, see? Good one.
I out-geeked you there.
You just went with the Bacta for the block. And the medical droid puts a little thing on there to tell him it's time to come up.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing about the prequel trilogy, just wrapping up the Plinkett reviews of that, is that there was so much potential. Like, it could have been... I mean, you can see little sparks of things throughout all 3 episodes, quite frankly, that could have made for great Star Wars movies. And they could have been excellent. I mean, I think George Lucas could have done it with another four or five rewrites and maybe some additional people coming in and saying, you know what, George, you're not Jesus of sci-fi. Maybe change this or take out.
What's sad is that George knows that. He knows he's no good.
Yeah.
He hates it. He doesn't enjoy the writing process. He needed, you know, Lawrence Kasdan or fucking Frank Darabont or somebody, you know, somebody with chops to come in and put a story in there.
Yeah.
I don't see anything salvageable about the structure of the
not the structure, there are certain little elements of it that are great. I mean, I thought for his part, I thought Obi-Wan was a good character. I think they could have done more with Obi-Wan, but I mean, how can you not do Obi-Wan correctly? He actually did that one right.
Tried.
Yeah.
But it was the entire philosophy. Plinkett hit it on the head, which is that you can't. I mean, there's just when you're acting against blue screens all the time, there's just no, you know, there's no hope for real story. And all the, you know, the characters sitting on couches and talking. I mean, it was completely inhibited by its own technology. I mean, it was actually the absolute opposite of what Star Wars was.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, technology propelling an amazing story. This was technology killing, you know, just absolutely prohibiting a decent, you know, actual film.
Yeah.
Just real filmmaking. It is tragic, really.
Well, the thing that I disagreed with Plinkett about for episode 3 was the length of the duel. I thought the length of the duel was fine. The way they fucked it up was they didn't have any sort of emotional strain to it. There wasn't, an ongoing. I mean, if you look at the original trilogy, all the saber duels had some sort of dialogue going on, some sort of tension building.
And some sort of point to them, some character. And then, I mean, Confused Matthew hit it on the head about the duel, is that Ben Kenobi walks away from, I mean, really kind of not like Ben for just, you know, cutting this guy's arms and legs off and letting him burn to death. At least go and cut his head off and end it, you know, just put an end to it. He's like, hey, I loved you. Bye.
Yeah.
I'll see you. Hope you're not in too bad a pain as you burn to death on this lava shore. Take care. Love you.
Yeah. I could change.
What a dick.
I could change the absolute trajectory of the universe now by sticking this lightsaber through your skull. But
through
I'm just gonna,
eye socket.
Well, I gotta get back. I gotta piss.
I gotta. Yeah, I gotta go.
I gotta say,
it's warm out here on the lava planet. So I'll check you later, there, Anakin.
Yeah, I need a cool. I need a lemonade.
In his review, he cuts right from that to the climax of or to the lightsaber duel between Darth Vader and Ben Kenobi in Star Wars in A New Hope, I'm sorry. And, Darth Vader says, when last we met, I was but a learner and you were now I am the master. And he goes, does that sound anything like the kind of what Darth Vader would say if that's how you left it? You know, wouldn't he say, last time we met, I was on fire and you just cut all my arms and legs off?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just didn't match. Nothing matched.
Right.
Nothing. You know, it's if you watch them all in sequence, you'd be like, "What? That doesn't work."
Yeah. And the lightsaber duel in Star Wars was great. It was great. And it didn't need.
And again, limited by the technology. I don't remember if it was Plinkett that made the point. I think it was in the episode 2 review about how the lightsabers were very seldomly used in the original trilogy because it was a difficult, you know, effect.
Yeah.
In the first one, they actually had to have like rods with glitter on it to key in to do the rotoscoping and all that. It was really difficult.
Yeah.
It was a limited effect. So it was, you know, art from adversity.
Right.
Luke hardly ever rocked with the lightsaber because, you know, he had other powers and other techniques and whatnot.
Yeah.
And now it's like everybody's got a fucking lightsaber because you on your home computer today could do a lightsaber effect if you wanted to.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And even the Emperor. I mean, there's a big bit in the review about the Emperor having a lightsaber.
Yeah, a guy can shoot lightning out of his ass.
He can shoot lightning, and he uses, Plinkett says, well, why didn't he just, like, use the Force to, like, stop Luke's heart? Or to just to do that to Mace Windu or, you know.
Right, Mace Windu, yeah.
Mace Windu.
Confused Matthew, if you watch it, the Emperor keeps shooting lightning, and Confused Matthew says, why doesn't he just stop?
Yeah.
He's like frying his own face. He's like, just stop. Just stop shooting the lightning.
And, you know, I was, it's completely unclear, much like the Cypher Diaz thing in episode 2, completely unclear as to what actually happens to the Emperor, how he ends up becoming that shriveled, bloated, gimpy guy that we know as the Emperor.
Well, he needed a so he fried his own face with his Force lightning.
Well, did he fry his face, or was he was the younger looking Emperor the actual like a disguise that he was using the Force to disguise his face? Well, he does say, as he's being zapped by the lightning, he does say, can't hold it any longer, or something to that effect.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know if that meant his bowels or what he was talking about, but, you know. I think
hate those movies.
I mean, I took it, I have no idea. In fact, I have no hypothesis in terms of which way it goes. Is it a disguise that he lost, or was he just mangled by the lightning? Because Mace Windu wasn't mangled by the lightning, nor was Luke, or...
Right.
Or, you know, Anakin, for that matter. He got zapped by lightning, too.
By Dooku.
Yeah, by Dooku.
Dooku. Worst fucking character name ever.
Yeah.
Dooku.
Well, talk about being, influenced by what's going on around him. I think the only reason why they incorporated Christopher Lee into that movie was because of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. He was great in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I was just watching that the other night.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, it could have done so much. And the one point that Plinkett made in the episode 3 review that I've been making for years, and I was glad to hear someone else make it, was, you know, why is Darth Vader so elevated in these films? In the original trilogy, he was just a gimp. He was the Emperor's monkey boy.
Right.
He was just like the analogy made was great. This like an SS guy. You know, he'd just go where the action was and fuck with people and scare the crap out of them. But otherwise, next to the Emperor, he was nothing.
Yeah.
I never saw Darth Vader shoot lightning out of his ass.
Right.
I mean, the Emperor, obviously, all super powerful. And yet they make Darth Vader out in the trilogy, in the prequels, to be this, you know, the one of the prophecy.
Oh, so fucking stupid. So fucking stupid. That whole, like, you know, the chosen one with the
Immaculate
virgin.
Conception.
Yeah. Oh, God. Just so ridiculous. Yeah, it just doesn't. It didn't need to be that. It was just so incongruous with the original trilogy. There was no discussion of virgin births and saviors and Jesus, like galactic Jesuses in the original trilogy. You don't need that.
Yeah, and Plinkett pointed it out, something I'd never thought of, the way the little council there on the Death Star was fucking making fun of him. They're like, oh, Darth Vader, give me a break.
You and your stupid religion.
Sad devotion to that ancient religion.
It's like Bill Maher.
17 years old. That's ancient?
Yeah, right. It was like Bill...
none of it made sense.
Yeah.
Ancient.
Yeah.
Luke is what, 19? Yeah, the Jedi's ruled until 19 years ago. That's not even a generation there, douchebags.
Yeah. The little staff of middle managers on the Death Star were made up of like Richard Dawkins and Bill Maher and PZ Myers, right? Like you and your stupid religion, you.
You and your gay religion.
You stupid idiot with your stupid religion. Your little naive baby religion. Ugh!
Fuck! What are you? Jesus! God! Oh! God! Grand Moff Tarkin. I mean, Darth Vader seems subservient to Grand Moff Tarkin, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, Vader, release him. I'm like, wait, the chosen one takes order from Grand Moff Tarkin? Really?
Right.
I'd grab Grand Moff by his underpants and throw him out an airlock.
Yeah, I mean, a stiff breeze knocks over Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah.
I mean, Grand Moff Tarkin was the crypt keeper, for God's sake.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's 130 years old.
It looked like he was on like stage 9 of lung cancer or something. He's just like ready to implode.
Be honest, you know, it took him. Almost 20 years to build that Death Star, so it probably really wore him out.
Yeah, that's right. He built
it
himself.
Old before his time.
He had his DeWalt power drill, and he's just going to town.
All
you know?
Those contractor overruns.
Fuck me. This, what? Yeah. Why do I always have to do this? Why can't I get Vader, get your ass over here and start, you know, bringing 2x4s with you?
They built the Twin Towers faster than that, and they had to deal with gravity.
Yeah.
You're building a giant space station with no gravity to worry about. You can move those pieces around. I mean, fuck.
Yeah.
You can have one guy lifting, you know, 20-ton girders into place. It's got to move faster than 20 years to build that fucking Death Star.
Well, the other thing that Plinkett pointed out that was imperceptible, I think, the first time I saw it, episode 3, which implies that I've seen it multiple times, which I have.
I've seen it once.
Yeah. But the thing about the last third of the movie is the special effects did take a giant step backwards. I mean, they weren't as good. Once they get to the lava planet and there's all that magma and fire and everything, and then where you really notice a lack of special effects budget is on the Death Star. When they're standing on the deck of one of the Star Destroyers and you see the Death Star in the back, it looks like a Christmas ornament hanging about 3 feet away from the window.
It probably was at that point.
Yeah.
They got Lucas with like a fishing line, with a fishing reel, you know, this little thing, hey.
Yeah.
I don't see how that's possible. I mean, I don't know if we talked about this on the show, but there's a documentary running around cable now, hosted by Tom Cruise, about ILM. Have you seen it? About Industrial Light and Magic?
Oh yeah. It's on Stars or something like that.
Yeah, Stars. Yeah. And watching it, you're like the first half of it, you're like, oh yeah, wow. You know, the way they design motion control cameras and, you know, practical stuff. So like the first half, their first, I don't know, 20 minutes. It's an hour and something long, but the first quarter of it maybe is all about ILM's development of practical special effects and stuff that really, you know, in camera stuff, and you're like, oh yeah, and those movies were great. And then when they cross that digital threshold, when it becomes all, I think Jurassic Park was really the last movie that they didn't just fuck up with all the digital stuff. And then after that, you're like, you just watch the movies get worse and worse and worse throughout the course of this documentary, and you're just like, wow, it's really, I really blame ILM for just screwing this up. And George Lucas, I mean, he owns the fucking thing, so it's tragic what digital effects have done to movies.
Well, yeah, but I think it has less to do with the technology and more to do with the people supervising it. So if you look at, for example, something like ILM's work on Pirates of the Caribbean, the Davy Jones CG character is flawless. I mean, I had to do a double when I learned, because I saw the movie, the first movie he appears in, which I think is the second Pirates of the Caribbean. I sat throughout that movie thinking that it was all makeup and animatronics.
I had
no idea that it was CG. And it was only afterwards. Impressive. Yeah. I mean, I went back and said, holy fuck, that guy, that was CG? Are you kidding me? Yeah. And but then compare that to the latest Indiana Jones shit fest, which was just every, you could tell, you could just pinpoint every single green screen shot. Every
Especially
sort of
the monkey sword fight that was made me want to kill someone.
Oh my God. It makes me nauseous just to think there was a monkey sword fight.
Yeah. But again, I write that out to, I mean, George Lucas had a script by Frank Darabont for that movie on his desk. I blame George Lucas for that shit fest.
Yeah.
For having his head so far up his own ass that he can't take. You just can't tell that guy anything. You can't go, oh no, that's not going to work. He'll have you killed. I mean, it just somebody from ILM will come and just like digitally erase you.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at going back to Star Wars momentarily, if you look at the, and you can find them online, if you look at the original treatment and even I think the original script for Star Wars, it's awful. I mean,
it's insane.
Or his treatment.
Han Solo's like a green, like a alien of some kind. I mean, I think Plinkett made the case for this. If George Lucas had the kind of control, the non-studio control of Star Wars that he had of the prequels, it would have been the biggest train wreck in history.
Yeah,
and quickly forgotten. But he had to report to his, you know, he had 20th Century Fox to answer to.
Yeah, and if you look at
Alan Ladd and those guys.
And if the, I think it's the Return of the Jedi treatment that Lucas wrote, which Lawrence Kasdan thankfully rescued to some degree.
Yeah.
You know, I think the final duel, and maybe it was the duel in Empire, I'm not sure which one, but there was this, it took place in like Vader's cave or something, and it was Luke versus Vader, and then Yoda and Obi-Wan were ghosts, like sitting on the side remarking about it, almost like John Madden and Pat Summerall. Like it's so uncomfortable to read it, and knowing that was George Lucas's idea. So if you superimpose that onto the prequel trilogy,
It makes more sense.
It makes absolute sense that this is. Yeah. I mean, this is where everything went wrong. It was you just focus
and if you think
it right
about
back
it,
on,
I mean,
on Lucas.
The three act, the Star Wars is a perfect. You really didn't need, as much as I love Empire, you didn't need a trilogy out of that.
Yeah.
It was only they only sequelized it because it was the most popular movie ever made at the time. I mean, Star Wars has a perfect internal three-act structure, you know, boom, 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 and the Death Star is the ultimate weapon in the universe, and they blow it up. So now what? Okay, so the Death Star is the ultimate weapon. They just blew it up. I guess by the third one, we need another one.
Yeah.
I mean, even as a kid, I was disappointed in that. That the third one, they had to go back to another Death Star.
Yeah.
You know, that just to me was like, oh, you've already done that. You know, like Han Solo says in the, well, you don't like the Family Guy stuff, but they've got the third episode of the Family Guy Star Wars thing out.
Yeah.
And Han, you know, Peter Griffin as Han is sitting there in the briefing room when they're talking about the Death Star, and he says, "Haven't we already fucking done this before?" He just comes around and says, "Didn't we already fucking do this?"
Yeah.
And I just about fell over.
Yeah.
Died laughing. But that's true. I mean, it's like, you've already shot this load. What? Why are we doing this again?
Yeah, I think we talked about this before. I think there's, you know, when I first saw the half-completed Death Star in a magazine or something before the movie came out, I thought, yeah, oh shit, that's the old Death Star. They just kind of stuck it back together like a, yeah, you know, like you break a lamp and you kind of super glue it back together.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that's what they did.
It's like in Contact when the rich guy, the crazy old rich guy, John Hurt or whatever, had built a redundant machine, you know, the second great big machine.
Right.
On an island somewhere. It's like, that's what they did. They had, you know, it was like, well, fuck it. We're already building one. Let's build a second one.
Yeah.
Next to the teddy bear planet.
Speaking of that, I loved that movie when it first came out, but it just has not held up at all.
You're right. That's exactly right. My opinion. I loved it when it first came out, and now I really can't abide it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's strange.
It's,
but
yeah,
it's not a special effects thing. I mean, I don't know. It seems too smug and its own ass now. Like, something about it just bothers me now. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, it just seems, I think it's. I've got this sort of retroactive hatred now for what's his name? Shit. Who's the director?
Oh, yeah. McConaughey?
No. The director. Directed Back to the Future, for God's sake. And I'm totally blanking
Zemeckis?
On his name. Yeah, Robert Zemeckis. Yeah, because his CG movies are so fucking awful.
They are.
This is the same guy who made Back to the Future? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and Roger Rabbit and some of the greats, right?
Yeah.
Peanut and I watched A Christmas Carol over the holiday. And it's still not there.
Yeah.
There's one movie out there that did mocap in a digital world that did it perfectly, and that's Monster House.
Yeah.
And did you see that?
Yeah. It was really good.
That movie kicked ass.
Yeah.
Because what they did was they kept the mocap environment, the realness and the gravity and the, you know, just the physics of mocap, but they digitalized it in a way that you're not going, "Oh, that's fucking creepy."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
In I don't want to see a digital Colin Firth or a digital you know, Gary Oldman. Just give me the real ones.
Yeah.
Because those are superb actors.
Right.
I don't want to, or just digitize them out to where I can't tell that it's them, because it bugs the shit out of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It, like the Tom Hanks, and I mean, they were way not there for Polar Express.
Well, Polar Express is just frightening.
It is frightening. I mean, Peanut couldn't watch it when she was littler. Yeah. It terrified her.
Yeah.
And terrified me. I mean, there's something about those zombie eyes and the mouths.
Yeah.
They just, but you would think it's been 5 or 6 years since Polar Express. You'd think they'd be there, and they're not.
And how many years was Polar Express after Jurassic Park? Like 10 years? Come on.
But yeah, I'm still in awe of Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
It still holds up.
Right.
It's still unbelievable what they were able to accomplish with that.
Yeah.
But yet, you know, humans, they're just not there yet.
Yeah, yeah. I swear to God, this is a show about politics.
It is. It will be once politics starts happening again.
Yeah, I know. There's no real politics.
Well, we're just waiting for the new Congress.
That's right. So, and we reserve the right to just act like complete fucking geeks that we are.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You don't have to listen, people. Fuck off.
Sorry, yeah. Bite me. We'll talk about Star Wars for a half an hour.
Yes,
fuck
we will.
You.
And you'll like Cousin Avi.
Yeah, and it is the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show, brought to you exclusively by Bubble Genius, Pure Products, Pure Genius, Bubble Genius. They have a commercial, which I'm going to play here in a second, but I did want to mention that... they are the exclusive sponsor of the show, and that there are a bunch of New Year's specials, which I will be enumerating when we talk about them again in just a few minutes. See, that's like a teaser. They're like some really good New Year's stuff at bubblegenius.com. All handmade, vegan, and I really hope that you supported your liberal businesses for the holidays this year. Seriously, because I'm still, like, compiling a list. If I find anyone who's, you know, not supporting liberal independent businesses, there's going to be smacking happening. So we've got this commercial. I'm going to play this now. And this is actually the short version of the Bubble Genius commercial. We'll talk about the longer version afterwards. So here we go.
Bob and Oh Show brought to you by Bubble Genius.
These ladies are so clever.
Totally vegan.
That's genius.
Right.
It's Bubble Genius.
Pirate Bar.
And I fully intend to scrub my taint vigorously Michelle Bachman's face. I'm going to wear that thing down to a nub.
Put in the promo code Bob and Elvis. B-O-B-A-N-D-E-L-V-I-S.
Buy some soap, you fuckers. Is the word surfactant in it anywhere?
Surfactants.
No, they don't use surfactants.
No surfactants. This is good stuff. Seriously. Bubble Genius Pro Products. Pure Genius. Bubble Genius at bubblegenius.com.
Come on, girls. Give them some love.
We have the greatest sponsors in the history of all of radio and podcasting.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Yep.
Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Yeah, I don't even know how to feel about that. Mm. It's almost as though Bubble Genius is going, you know what? We're gonna cut together a bunch of sound of Bob and Elvis talking about us, so we know exactly what they're going to say. So we can organize their thoughts for them.
Yes.
And those are the ones they chose. You were washing your taint.
Oh yeah, that I'm very proud.
Yeah, and we say surfactants a lot. We like to say surfactants.
It's a great word, surfactant. Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, they did a longer version of that. That is just where they took like a series of quotes from the show. Now it starts to make me a little uncomfortable, quite honestly, to hear because I know you never listen to the show.
No,
for this exact reason. And so I'm just going to play a little of it because it's just going to get to the point where I'm going to feel oogie just hearing myself. So, and maybe we'll make if people want to actually have a copy, a downloadable copy, maybe I'll post it as an MP3 and you can put it on your iTunes and put it in your pants and do whatever with it. But this is this thing is 4 minutes long. Listen to this.
By the way, you know, I forgot to mention, this is the Bob and Elvis Show. I'm Bob Seska in Pennsylvania. That's Elvis Dingledean in Nebraska.
There's lots of idiots on parade, as always.
Because you're mature.
Speaking of annoying sounds.
Doctor, my mind hurts. It's what the...
I have an iguana, for God's sake.
That's disturbing.
I've got a very loud voice, they say.
We're just fucked, man. That's just the bottom line.
Stop saying the stimulus didn't work.
So disgusted by the douchiness there.
I've got my very own douchebag stories.
I mean, just the douchiness.
Oh, my God! What is that? What is wrong with you people?
Evangelical, Baptist, Catholic, Protestant, you know, ecumenical douchewad.
Go fuck yourself and die, asshole.
Oh, God, my dog's puking.
Bob and Oh Show brought to you by Bubble Genius.
All right, so that's there you go.
That's why I don't listen to the show.
Yeah. You know, I don't remember saying most of those things.
No. And I used to do the show in a drug-induced stupor, so I don't remember most of it either.
You too?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm staring at that puking dog right now. She's sleeping on the couch down here, and she looks so comfortable and sleepy right now. Nothing better than a sleeping dog.
And we tended to say douchebags a lot.
Yeah.
Somehow. And I think every instance of that has been cut into that song.
I think so.
I think it's still going. I'm going to advance
ahead. It's a movie I could watch with my hair on fire.
I saw it 15 times in the theater.
Smart accountability.
They don't bury cowards at Arlington Cemetery.
I had no idea people were bleeding from orifices.
A flaming douche. The Sarah Palin tweet control room just empties her stupid into the...
So there you go, yeah.
Oh, wow.
You know what? Maybe I'll post that so you can download it if you want
to. Yeah, that'd
know,
be cool.
The whole thing. So
that was neat.
It while it should, I mean, by all indications, stroke our egos. I don't know why. It makes me... I don't know. Just hearing my own voice played back like that is just...
Yeah, that's why I don't listen to the show. I don't enjoy listening to myself.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a thing of beauty, this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's masterful the way they did that.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just awesome. Weird. For you and I think it's just kind of like...
Yeah.
I said that. Oh, my God. Because the show,
I'm freezing right now. By the way,
yeah,
I should mention that the 1,000-gallon propane tank for the that runs the Farm of Doom is running on fumes right now, and
good
the
God.
The local co-op has been co-opted. It's now something else. I used to, you know, because it's such a small town, I used to be able to just pick up the phone and go, dude, I need some propane, and they'd be over in like 12 minutes.
Yeah,
and now it's from like another fucking town, and they have like, you know, minimums and like a 48-hour wait. Like they'll charge you an extra 10% if you need it in an emergency. It's fucking bullshit. So I'm freezing. It's like 12 outside here.
God help you for being in such a remote area that you have to rely on people to deliver
heat,
your fuel. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That you're so far away that putting a pipe to bring some form of gas to your home.
Oh,
it's just it's just a bridge too far.
Oh yeah, yeah. Even in town, I don't think they've got underground gas in town. Everybody's got tanks.
Well, you know, and again, I'm traveling on Friday, and naturally there's going to be a blizzard.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to like 12 hours standing at the Philadelphia airport. You know. Just rotting in my underpants, just like, like just with 1,000 stinky loud people in a terminal.
I, you know, when in early first week of December, I had to go to New York for, I went to Ted Sorensen's memorial.
Yeah.
In New York at Lincoln Center there, and got to see Jack Kennedy's daughter. You know, I got to see Carolyn Kennedy. That was pretty cool. Tweety was there.
Tweety
spoke.
Yeah,
you know, because Tweety used to be a speechwriter.
Did he have to hand out like those plastic sheets and goggles like Gallagher does in the front row?
I wasn't in the front. The front row was reserved for the likes of Carolyn Kennedy and that crew.
Yeah.
But the only way to get out of Omaha to get anywhere is to go through somewhere else. I mean, sometimes you have to go backwards to go forwards. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the two major airlines that service the Omaha airport, their drop-offs are either fucking O'Hare, no thanks, or Minneapolis. And in anything after about November, that's dicey, you know, at best.
Yeah.
And the most expensive flight was the Delta got me there, you know, directly. And so I actually put a day ahead of the memorial just to make sure I got there, because I was just so terrified I was going to get snowed out and not make it in time.
Yeah.
So, but it was a lovely memorial.
Yeah, and as I've started to think about the idea of leaving earlier, but I mean, you know, talk about a roll of the dice, because that could even be more of a hassle than actually, you know, because the chances are. Flight's gonna be on time. Everything's gonna be fine.
Yeah.
The goddamn storm's gonna fly off to the north somewhere. It's gonna be up in the Catskills, and Philadelphia will be untouched.
Yeah.
And because it's 36 hours out, God only knows what can happen.
Does Philly not deal with snow well, kind of like DC?
Better than DC, that's for sure. But you know the way airports are. I mean, they'll look for any excuse to just completely, you know, rape you and strip you of any last remaining bits of your own dignity and human sanity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way they are. I mean, it was, you get out, and we talked about this before, but you get out of the car, and from there, you just have you leave your dignity behind.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
you enter a police state.
That's right. You just go, you put on tunnel vision and just shut your mouth. And this is why I don't like, I was tweeting about this last time I flew. This is why I don't like the invariable, like, loud, like, overweight, ugly, like, wearing their pajamas, disheveled group that is on every flight. You're there, and they're ugly. And you're waiting there at the gate, and there's this group of loud people, like, oh, it's really early around here.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, is this the first time you flew? Yeah. Boy, it's cold. Yeah. I hope it doesn't snow. Do you think they're going to serve food?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just
a stereotypical, right out of a John Hughes movie.
Right. And they just will not. There needs to be a rule at the gate. Now, like I said, you can use your outdoor voices, let's say, in the terminal when you first come in, when you're checking your baggage. Fine. Okay? I'll give you that. But the rule, when you get to the gate, when you're actually there waiting and then on the plane, indoor voices, library voices, please.
So let me get this straight. So your civil libertarianism extends only so far as your own personal comforts.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
So the body scanners and everything, a bridge too far, but if you could force fat, ugly people to be quiet, you would.
Yes. And no
just
ugly,
so we got that straight.
And no ugly people. And that's the other thing. I was just no ugly people fly.
Yeah. Nobody that's that fine. You can't bear to look at.
Of course.
See, once you're on the plane, you don't see anything but the backs of people's heads. Yeah. So who cares?
That's right. That's right. But I mean,
I came very close once to being escorted to federal penitentiary by the Federal Aviation Administration.
I'm sure.
And I wrote an open letter. I'll have to find it. It's a great open letter to the woman who almost got me thrown off that plane. And it was really the airline's fault. But I was traveling alone. I was traveling with Peanut. And it was just the two of us. And the airline had fucked me at the last minute and not given us seats together. And she was four. And so I had to, it was up to me to beg the woman, this woman sitting by herself, but traveling with her family, but sitting by herself, to give up, to switch seats with me.
Yeah.
So I could sit next to my 4-year-old daughter. And she was going to give me shit about it. She was going to give me attitude, this fucking woman. And I swear to God, I've never been closer to murdering someone, like breaking the tray table off and inserting it in her.
Yeah.
In an unpleasant way. Was gonna give me shit about moving seats so I could sit with my 4-year-old daughter. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And they almost had to escort me off with the scene I was making. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of flying.
Well, go to your on-demand, dial up, I think it's the FX network, and look at the Louis episode about traveling, where he travels to the South for a gig.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of predictable, a stand-up comic doing an airplane thing. But the way he approaches it is just brilliant. Because And there's a coda at the end of the show, which I have no qualms about spoiling here. So spoiler alert.
Uh-oh.
He's back on the plane, and there's I think he starts off, and this is important to preface it by saying this, that people just have generally a sense of entitlement. Everyone believes that the world ought to rotate around them just because. And just like me, I think you should shut up in the gate. So I think in that way, I'm guilty of that. But during this coda at the end of the show, he's back on the plane, he's putting his bag in the overhead compartment, and there's a woman right next to him with this gigantic, like, duffel bag, trying to cram this thing in the overhead compartment, and the flight attendant is trying to get this woman to check the bag, and Louis C.K. just turns to the woman and goes, the woman is saying that she flies a lot. I've flown a lot with this. I've flown a lot with this airline. And Louis C.K. turns to her and says, well, the fact that you've flown a lot won't make your bag smaller or this thing larger. I thought was great.
He's something else.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't just about fly. It was he did a bit about the South, like the weirdness of the South.
I'm sure to appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't the typical stuff. It was actually a very unique take. On the South, including a little bit of Southern hypocrisy.
Never.
Right. So I strongly recommend
Haley Barbour. Anyone?
Yeah, this had to do more with homophobia, but but it was really good. It was really good. Really good. I highly recommend that. So, nevertheless, I guess we should talk about some politics here. Mm. I want to talk about the birds falling from the sky. I don't give a shit. I mean, sorry.
Was that?
It's weird, and there. It's a strange coincidence, but it's not Armageddon or anything like that.
I was gonna say that was very biblical.
Yeah,
a little terrifying.
Well, just today there were more birds falling from the sky in Sweden. So I don't know. Make of that what you want. There was the first thing which happened in Arkansas and then Louisiana. And then there was another story in Daily Coast about how the bee population is down 96% in the United States.
See? X-Files.
Yeah.
Something going on.
Right.
There's something. The fragile ecosystem. It starts with the bees.
Yeah. And there was something else in Argentina. Wasn't there? There were fish.
Yeah.
Like 100 tons of fish washing ashore in Argentina.
Dead. Yeah.
And it's summer down there, so they're probably experiencing, climate change, global warming.
I don't want to be I don't want to feel this way, but I almost would, the I told you so is almost too sweet the movie 2012, that sort of apocalypse to happen, at the very least, as the world is caving in around us. And I think I'll be all right in Nebraska, right in the middle.
Yeah.
But as the coasts, topple into the sea and volcanoes rise out of, places where volcanoes ought not,
yeah.
I can at least point and laugh at conservatives and go, ha ha. Douchebags.
From your oceanfront property.
From my new oceanfront property, right.
Yeah, yeah.
That'll be awesome.
So, I mean, I think the birds are just weird coincidences, just weird events that have happened. But I think the bees and the fishes are a little, or I should say a lot more worrisome.
Worrisome, yeah.
Yeah. And, thank God we have the 112th Congress being inaugurated today.
Oh, because they're serious about climate change.
Yeah, the 112th Congress, the incoming Republicans on the environment, 50% of the incoming Republicans deny the existence of man-made climate change.
Nice.
I think Maddow did something the other day about Sarah Palin's transformation on that, where she actually did. Sarah Palin actually did admit to Brit. No, was it Brit Hume? No, it was Charlie Gibson, that she thought climate change was real and that people had a lot to do with it. Mm. But now, not so much. Now she's,
I'm actually surprised by that number, 50%. That seems low. I mean, I would expect it to be more like 80%.
Yeah, well, 86% are opposed to any climate change legislation that increases government revenue.
That seems
strange.
Low, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know a single Republican that would support anything that would kick industry in the ass.
Yeah, which is, I guess, what? Cap and trade. I don't know what that refers to.
Anything, yeah. Frank Luntz was on fucking NPR this morning.
Oh no!
There was this great, and it was just like a phone in, just a little
with his
clip,
Fisher Price man hair.
But with it, he was talking about the segment was really interesting. It was about the science and the history of sound bites and how they've compressed now. The average length of the political soundbite is 9 seconds now.
Yeah.
Down from the 80s to from like 40 seconds. And it was this really interesting piece about the economy of words. And of course they got to bring in Luntz cause that's, what he does. Luntz, whatever it is. And, then he was decrying it. What made me mad was, and I guess I don't begrudge him because somebody, if it wasn't him, somebody would have to be what he is. So, I mean, I guess, you can't begrudge him a living, and he's made a really good one out of it. But he was saying, I wish there was more, as an academic and a scholar and an author, I wish there was more substance there. I'm like, but dude, you're entirely responsible for it. Entirely responsible during the Clinton years for this egregious, just destruction of thought in political content where it's just nothing but bumper stickers now. And the clip they ran was something from Fox News, Daryl Issa saying, the perfect 9 second clip of him shitting on big government, basically. And it was just fascinating, but fuck that guy, Frank.
Yeah, fuck him.
Fuck him. But like I said, if it wasn't him, somebody would be the arch demon of sound bites.
Right. Right.
Of but political language destruction.
Yeah. Yeah. And naturally the Republicans are based entirely around that. I mean, that's entirely what they do. They don't do anything else.
No. Now, let them have it. They've campaigned and they've been talking and their sound bites are all about $100 billion. So go, go do it. Let's see it. Let's see you do it.
Did you see Lawrence O'Donnell the other night? He gets these like 5-person panels on to discuss whatever. And he's got, first of all, he gets the worst progressive the worst representative of progressives on there, who's just, progressives are all about single payer and fuck Obama.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the progressive. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that. That's exactly how we think.
Uh-huh.
There was a congressman, and I think he was an incoming Republican congressman. No. He's an existing Republican congressman, and, he was screeching about government takeover of healthcare. And you know exactly where this is going. Lawrence O'Donnell said, well, what's your health care? And the guy says, well, I have Medicare.
Oh.
And he's screaming about government takeover of health care.
He didn't say he had Medicare. Really?
Yes, he absolutely. He admitted on MSNBC, you know, in the 10 o'clock hour on the Lawrence O'Donnell show, that this guy, while saying government takeover of health care was bad, he's got Medicare. He's on Medicare. And Lawrence O'Donnell stopped and said, are you kidding? Is that? And the guy said, well, I don't have any choice. I have to be on Medicare. Well, no, you don't. You can opt out. You can supplement your Medicare with various other private health care options.
Right.
You don't have to be on Medicare. You know, and there's no shame there. There's just utterly no shame whatsoever. And it doesn't matter because it's not about substantive policy. The Republicans aren't about that. They're about whatever fits on a bumper sticker, whatever, you know, Fisher-Price man comes up with in a focus group.
Yeah. It's about fear. It's about knee-jerk, you know, fear-based responses to sound bites. Government takeover of healthcare is terrifying. That sounds scary.
Yeah.
Medicare sounds warm and fuzzy and, oh, I get Medicare? Oh.
Yeah.
Government takeover, you know, reeks of death panels.
Yeah. Which they're still saying, by the way.
Oh, sure.
I think saw on Washington Monthly, Steve Bennett. There's another reference to death panels. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
I think Jonah Goldberg wrote a blog entry, and screw me for spending time reading Jonah Goldberg.
Oh my God! But, that guy's awful.
He mentions about death. He mentioned about end of life care and brought that up again.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable.
It worked.
And then
though Sarah Palin got the, you know, 2010 Lie of the Year award from PolitiFact or one of those, you know, for it. It sticks. It's a soundbite. It works.
Right. And at the same time, I mean, here are the kind of people we're dealing with regards to specifically hypocrisy. I mean, back on December 23rd, leading conservatives, including Rudy Giuliani, and former Bush officials Michael Mukasey, Tom Ridge, and Fran Townsend met in France with a forum organized by supporters of the Mujahideen.
Yeah.
A group declared by the U.S. since 1997 to be a terrorist organization.
Mm-hmm. What was the reason for that meeting? I mean, I saw the clip, but I didn't. What were they doing? Why?
Let me see here. I'm looking at Glenn Greenwald's post about it.
Found something other than Obama's national security stuff to talk about.
That's right. I don't see it right off the bat here. Let me see. They did exactly that. Let's go to the Washington Post piece. Loading,
because I mean, it's funny the way that I mean, I've been militarily aware since I was very young because of my dad. I mean, my dad was a intelligence guy, and he had all these great books laying around, the U.S. war machine, the Soviet war machine. I used to, when I was little, I used to just read books about Soviet tanks and stuff. And so Mujahideen, to this day, I still have kind of a warm and fuzzy feeling about that word, you know, Mujahideen, because they were the good guys in Afghanistan part one or part 18, whichever way you look at it from history. But when the Soviets invaded, the Mujahideen were the good guys and he rooted for them. And around my house, it was like, oh, Mujahideen, that's woo, go Mujahideen. Cause we were kicking, Ivan in the ass hard with, a couple $1 trillion from the CIA in briefcases and some Stinger missiles.
Yeah.
So it's strange now to retrofit Mujahideen with a negative connotation. Yeah.
Well, it says here they were actually hired to speak here at the forum. So they were just paid speakers. And I mean, here's a Giuliani quote. Appeasement of dictators leads to war, destruction, and loss of human lives. Doy. For your organization to be described as a terrorist organization is just really a disgrace. So what they went there to do was to defend the group. And Giuliani explicitly defended the group.
Hmm. Against being labeled a terrorist. Maybe they're good guys. I mean, I don't know anything about this group. What have they done? Have they blown up children? Or are they the Mujahideen of old where they rise up against oppressors, but they're actually lovely, peace-loving Muslims.
Yeah.
Wish you'd give them money so they could build schools.
Yeah, and it's not the Afghanistan Mujahideen, which evolved sort of into Al-Qaeda. This is this particular group is a group of Iranian exiles. So,
well,
yeah, I guess the motivation then was to...
I don't know why this, the U.S. State Department has called them terrorists, man. I don't know what the deal is. They probably have... I mean, all of these groups, every single one of them, the Muslim Brotherhood, I mean, they all have their you know, their public political... I mean, look at the IRA, for Christ's sake. Yeah. I mean, the IRA had, like, a president. Like, Sinn Féin, they had their own political organization that was legitimate to some extent. But yet the militant arm of the IRA is out there fucking blowing up school buses full of kids. I mean, it's every organization, all of these things have their black sheep and their legitimate political arm. So I don't know. I'm not going to point fingers at those guys for going to talk to somebody. It's funny that it happened in France, but...
Well, no, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the actual content specifically, yeah, or the actual idea of them speaking. They can speak to whoever the hell they want, whoever's paying them. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's the hypocrisy.
Yeah, that's right. If Obama did or Pelosi or, you know, that's somebody exactly else, right, it would be Fox News 24/7.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's the hypocrisy of it. It's just like, it's like when a gay Republican is outed.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about the gay. It's not about the fact that the Republican is gay. And you know what? A lot of progressives really fuck up on this because then it becomes, you know, 2 weeks of gay jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea is not, and the object of scorn is not the gayness.
No,
it's the hypocrisy.
Before they're out of the closet, they're doing everything they can to legislate against gays.
Exactly.
Is that they're the party of family, you know, family values.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the problem.
Right.
I mean, our gays, you know, it's so funny that Barney Frank gets such, you know, is the constant, you know, target of scorn and ridicule by the right. It's like, yeah, but our gays are out and like he's trying hard to legislate in positive ways for the gay community. Your gays are, you know, in the closet and they do everything they can to punish and strip the rights of the gay community. That's a huge difference.
Right.
Huge difference.
So, I mean, invariably, if you're going to set an entire party platform based on very thin platitudes and bumper sticker slogans, there's going to be lots of, you know, ridiculous contradictions. That's just the nature of the Republican Party. And that's what we're going to be seeing, you know, throughout the 112th Congress.
Oh, it's going to be...
As these guys stumble over themselves.
Well, yeah. They're in an impossible situation. I agreed with... I don't know who was saying it the other day, but on NPR, somebody said that, you know, that it's really a shame that we didn't lose the Senate, too, in 2010.
Yeah.
Because Obama really needs that. I mean, Clinton had Newt Gingrich as an enemy, but then, I mean, and Obama will have Boehner, but Clinton had the combined Senate House monolith to deal with, and now the expectations from the teabaggers of what this 112th Congress should do and was mandated to do, the mandate is fuzzy at best. I mean, it's a mess.
Yeah,
they're just not going to know how to please anybody. In this, it's just going to be a fucking mess. And anything they do in the House is going to die in the Senate. It's just going to be gridlock for 2 years.
Yeah.
I think the backlash, the backlash against this Congress and then the next is going to be as bad in the Republican world as the backlash was in 2010 against us.
Yeah.
I think because there's going to be so much outrage. If the Tea Party can stay coalesced for that long, if the Republican Party can. I mean, there's something on Sullivan today about CPAC eating itself alive.
Yeah.
Frank Gaffney talking about how CPAC has been infiltrated by Muslims, by Sharia, Saudi-style Sharia Muslims. And CPAC, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
The Conservative Political Action Committee. Oh, my God. Frank Gaffney is insane. He is insane.
He really is.
He used to be like he was a deputy assistant secretary of defense under Reagan.
Yeah. And
that's
and a regular
terrifying.
And a hardball regular throughout the 2004 election cycle. I'll never forget that. That guy was on MSNBC, you know, the liberal network, all the goddamn time.
And he is certifiably insane. I mean, there's something
really,
really, really wrong with him.
Yeah. Yep.
He's absolutely crackpot.
Yeah, he is.
And now he's talking about CPAC being infiltrated by Sharia-loving Muslims. It's Sharia. He's got a book out about Sharia.
Yeah.
The threat to America.
Well, all the teabaggers, I mean, the Tea Party people are just going to be disappointed and they're going to be pissed off.
Outraged.
And it'll be fun to watch. I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch because, I mean, the House of Representatives, we can pretty much count them out as being effectual whatsoever.
They'll just be chasing their tail. I mean, they go after health care and it'll die in the Senate. I mean, they'll get nothing done. Much less cut $100 billion from the federal budget.
You know the name of the healthcare repeal bill is something like the repeal Obamacare, the job-killing healthcare legislation bill. It's like...
Oh, that's serious.
There's like the word job-killing healthcare bill or like job-killing Obamacare is actually in the title of the repeal legislation.
That's very serious.
Yeah, really. And they're reading the Constitution, which means they're extra serious.
Well, one of them, it was Bachman or somebody, wanted to create an amendment or something. It just had something in there about how everything had to go through this constitutional filter first before anything could even be voted on.
No, I did not see that. So basically what Michelle Bachman is saying is, I have no fucking clue what that third branch of the government is all about. You know, the Supreme Court.
Exactly.
But so we're gonna do that ourselves.
No, the teabaggers really love to talk about checks and balances, and obviously, provably, have no idea what that means. I got an email, one of those church basement fucking teabagger emails, months and months ago, bitching about something. I don't even remember what it was, fucking DADT or something. And the author said, "So much for checks and balances!" And I was like, "What do you mean? That's perfectly checked and balanced. The system continues to work." And oh my God, just no clue what that means.
Yeah.
What does that mean? And I had this whole long reply, and then I'm like, "Fuck it! What am I doing? Why am I wasting my time?"
Exactly. I mean, the whole purpose of the courts, Congressman Bachman, is to check the constitutionality of legislation.
Yeah, that comes out of Congress. Pass any wacky fucking thing you want.
Yeah. So we're gonna have,
go ahead, knock yourself out.
So we're gonna have like people of the qualifications of Sarah Palin, who doesn't know any difference between the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, checking the constitutionality of laws, right? Mm.
Yeah.
Good. Well, good.
Not to mention that the Congress in general, being the law passing body, it basically has ridiculous staffs of lawyers to do that. I mean, not to mention that it happens anyway.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake.
That's exactly right. They already do that. Any legislation that goes through, they have to check it to make sure that all of this hard work just doesn't get repealed right away because it's dumb stupid, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I took a civics class. I took AP Civics in high school, and we were tasked with coming up with a bunch of new, like writing our own laws, basically. And every single one I did, I purposefully crafted to be explicitly unconstitutional to see if anybody else would catch it. Because then it was like, you know how you do mock Congresses and mock UN and stuff like that? We had this whole mock legislative thing. We had three... Part we had everybody, you know, half the class was Congress and half the class was the judiciary, and the other half was I failed math, obviously. It was great at civics, but every single law I wrote was patently unconstitutional, and nearly all of them just sailed right through. Nobody noticed.
Yeah,
and I did that just to fuck with people.
Yeah,
just
like conducting an experiment.
We,
yeah,
well, yeah, and we did in 10th grade. I remember this in 10th grade, we did a mock. Congress prior to the Civil War, like a mock constitutional Congress, about the issue of slavery came up, and the teachers and the handbooks and everything do that very explicitly to catch kids about slavery and the constitutionality of it and how the founding fathers so failed, and every single kid except me was all about, oh, fuck slavery. And I represented a southern state. I was the representative from Georgia. And I was passionate about, I wanted my slaves. I wrote this whole speech about, no, I got to have my, bitches, I need my slaves. And I got in trouble for it. And I'm like, look, I'm a southern congressman in 1787, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
I need my slaves. I'm not giving this shit up.
Yeah.
And I got in trouble for it.
Well, it's 1787, for God's sake. Right.
Yeah. Right. And so, and I still remember the smug, horseshit attitude that my history teacher had when she said, "Ladies and gentlemen, you've just prevented the Civil War," and because they outlawed slavery in our mock constitutional Congress,
right?
And everybody, "Oh, yay for us!" And I'm like, "Great! Now I'm out of my plantation's fucked now." I mean, I was all bitter.
You're all bitter.
I took it way too
seriously. Sulking,
serious.
Yeah.
I was very upset that I got stripped of my slaves. But as I would have been. I mean, that's why it didn't happen in real life.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's
always causing problems.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if you saw this story too about, and this is, I think, a pretty decent point of conversation in the whole, you know, fracas about Huckleberry Finn this week. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, what now?
Well, what they want to do is they want to strip all copies of Huckleberry Finn of the N-word so that they can actually get back, they can actually put them back into schools and allow grade school kids to read it.
It's nigger. It's, the word is in the book constantly because it was written by a Southern, it was written, you know, of and for its time.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous, the kind of don't get me started on that. It happens every generation. They've tried to they fuck with this book, whether they just, and it loses, I would rather they just ban it outright.
Well, that's what they have just, they have it, banned it outright.
Well I know, but I mean, I would rather that than the expurgated version without the word nigger in it, because that's part of the experience of it. It's part of the culture of it. It's part of the experience. It's part of the conversation. You can't have a legitimate, real conversation about that book or its history or the history of its day without talking about it.
Right.
That way, without using, you know, that word.
Well, how about making that word a point of conversation when they're actually reading it? I mean, I don't see any need to ban it or censor it. Just let the word there. You know, I think Melissa Harris Lacewell, I forget her new name, her new married name.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's great. She was on with Chris Hayes on the Maddow Show the other night.
Yeah.
And she was saying that, you know, this is exactly what you said. This is part of history.
Yeah.
This is the way people spoke at that point in time.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there's no harm. And she said that kids hear it in everyday language far more often.
Oh, yeah. And for the wrong reasons.
And for the wrong reasons, exactly.
Yeah. They had the same, one of the great tragedies in Disney history, back to animation and film, is the Song of the South.
Yeah.
The film, the old Uncle Remus stuff. It's been pulled. It's not on DVD. You can't get it anywhere. You can get like bootlegs on VHS or Betamax or something. But I grew up with that. I remember that movie very well. And I grew up with my grandmother telling me memorized versions of Uncle Remus stories of the, you know, Brer Rabbit, Brer Fox. And this retarded political correctness has banned it from the film history. And it's this great, because it's so goddamn racist. Oh my God. The Joel Chandler Harris stories, the Uncle Remus stories, were passed down from slaves. They were the Brer Fox, Brer Rabbit was the ultimate anti-slave advocate, right? I mean, the whole metaphor of it was tricking the man. It was putting it to the man. I don't know if you grew up with those stories at all. They're even on your radar.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But they were written, Joel Chandler Harris, who was white, wrote them in a very specific, very realistic slave vernacular, an original sort of slave narrative written down. I mean, it's priceless in American literary history. And the film, you know, even though it's Disneyfied and Uncle Remus, there's a bluebird. It is very stereotypical, but the stereotype is from a legitimate literary history. And political correctness, it just, sometimes, and Democrats are more widely blamed for it, for political correctness, but some of it's just absolutely insane. It's just god awful, like zero tolerance on guns. These kids that are getting, you know, bringing plastic guns to school or little bitty knives and getting thrown out for the whole year. It's just anything that's that extreme. Anything zero tolerance is retarded.
Yeah, there's no deference to context. It's all about context.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, calling someone a nigger or reading it in a book are two very different things.
Of course. It's like sexual harassment. It's all about power. In that movie with Michael Douglas and Demi Moore, whatever that was called, and the book Disclosure. He said something in the movie that's always stuck with me. It's all about power and what power did I have? It's, you know, these days any schmuck that goes, oh, nice tits in a work environment, that's immediate sexual harassment, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the power structure is, or you just say, hey, you look nice today, Debbie. Boom, sexual harassment. It's the same thing. Without context, without an obvious, it's all about power. And the word nigger, and Richard Pryor talked about it, how at one point in his career, he said he would no longer use that word, and went through this whole explanation for it. But it's about power, and it's about degradation. And using it in a literary context and reading it in books like that and saying it in a conversation like we're having, it's not meant to be demeaning or deprecating in any way or the sort of power that the word had in the South at the time. My grandfather, I still remember my grandfather in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, used the nigra, right? He would talk about, he would say, oh, the nigras. Okay. And what he meant, you know, it just clinging to, just trying so hard not to actually say it, but just had that sort of slang, you know, oh, the niggers that live over there, right? And you can hear it just sort of embedded in there. It's a power thing.
Yeah.
It's a white black power thing. And
right.
They've co-opted it, the African American community, in order to take all the sting out of it. And the way they own it now has got us all chasing our
yeah.
tails and unable to deal with it.
And that said, you know, it shouldn't be used lightly either.
Oh no.
I mean, you know, I will use it in the context of discussing the word in the same way that we're doing now.
Yeah.
But it still makes me uncomfortable to say it because I know that some people are offended by hearing it.
Sure.
And I always, as a rule of thumb, I try to if a particular group says, "You know what? We're offended by that word and we don't like to have that word said at all." Well, I try to respect that, but at the same time, I also understand that, you know, we're not babies and that, you know, in the context
right.
of discussing something, we do have to say it in order
right.
to make a point about it.
I think there's as much harm in that attitude as there is on the opposite side of the spectrum. I mean, all things in moderation.
Right.
I don't believe in full on censorship of you know, and there's entire books written. There's a book you can buy called Nigger. I mean, it's the history of the word. And
yeah.
That author had big giant balls to go out and look at it, you know, honestly, without any political bullshit, and just set down a history of it and title the book that. I mean, it's there, you know, there's time, place for everything. And if you're not being deprecating, or if it's not, you know, meant to hurt or wound, we should have no problem in society saying really anything.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess on the same topic, just a brief note here that I guess now this court, this U.S. Court of Appeals struck down a 2008 FCC order fining ABC $27,000 each for showing nudity in NYPD Blue. Or partial
they
nudity.
Struck it down.
Yeah.
Really?
So you can actually now, you can
ABC
show.
ABC gets that money back?
I don't know that they get the money back, but it means that you can that commercial television can now show nudity if they choose.
Yeah, boy, NYPD Blue really pushed the envelope. They really did. I mean,
David
there was
Mills.
Bare asses in that show. There was two-thirds boobies going on.
Yeah.
With Donna Abundando, you could see those things around the corner.
Yeah, it was based on a 2003 episode where Connie McDowell, played by Charlotte Ross.
Yeah.
I mean, Lawrence O'Donnell played it last night. I mean, it's a pretty saucy scene.
Yeah,
I mean, as far as network goes, yeah.
Yeah, I remember very clearly. I was in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, for my grandmother's funeral.
Oh, by the way, I said saucy. What am I from? 1942.
Yeah, nice one. Hey, yeah. Saucy Gams
saucy,
there.
Saucy, hey.
No, I was in Hattiesburg for my grandmother's funeral, and it was the season finale or the series finale. of NYPD Blue. It was a big deal, and I really didn't want to miss it. And they did not run it on that ABC affiliate in the South, in Mississippi, because it was too saucy.
Right.
Just didn't run it. They just didn't run it. They ran some fucking, I don't know, infomercial or something. And I was flabbergasted.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah, but if, you know what? Let's face it. If you're scared of the human form, for God's sake, if you're frightened of that, and you don't want to see that on television. Don't worry, they're not gonna. Yeah, NBC is not gonna be running like nude shots in 30 Rock or something like that. Because there's standards and practices that regardless of what the government has to say about it, advertisers have a very different thing to say about it.
Yeah, exactly. So,
It's not going to be, I've played up, well, now all the networks are going to show nudes and have obscenities and all. No.
No. Because they still worry about their Procter & Gamble family advertisers.
That's right. Speaking of advertisers, Bubble Genius. It's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show. Bubble Genius, the exclusive and sole sponsor of this program. So if you like this show, for God's sake, go and buy some of their stuff. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. And by the way, as they mentioned in their commercial before, I always forget to mention this at the end, so I'm going to mention it now. Enter your promo code, which is Bob and Elvis, B-O-B-A-N-D-E-L-V-I-S, and get 15% off your entire order at bubblegenius.com. They've got their New Year's specials, their items that they're selling in honor of the 2011 or 2011. Choosing to say it, but I'm saying 2011. Bottoms Up, excellent champagne bottle soap and a rope. They've also got Snow Wonder. The bath is so delightful with their zesty peppermint snowflake bath bar. Sounds lovely and refreshing. Foam Sweet Foam. Huh. It's cheers to bath time when you've got your champagne bubble bath. And you know what I tried? You know what's great there? No. Is the Pit Stop deodorant?
Oh,
I just started using that, and it's literally the best deodorant I've ever used.
Wow!
And I've got a powerful stink that I need to cover.
Yes,
that makes it sound like I've got this great deodorant because I stink. But no, seriously, it's really really great, and it's of course all natural, and it doesn't have any aluminum in it. And they use, there's like natural, sweet-smelling scents are in there, too. So it's not only prevents odor, but it also smells really damn nice. Seriously.
It has a pun-filled name, Pit Stop.
Yeah, Pit Stop.
I get puns.
And it's a very discreet kind of gray flask. I don't know what you call a thing that you hold deodorant in. It's a flask.
Dispenser.
But it's got, and it just, whenever you see, whenever you hold a Bubble Genius product, it just feels like it's handmade. It's great. It's well packaged and the products are excellent, but it has that, you bought this from a real person and not some chemical factory along the Jersey Turnpike.
Right.
One of the great bonuses of buying from an independent business.
That's right.
So again, make sure to enter your promo code, which is Bob and Elvis, B-O-B-A-N-D-E-L-V-I-S, and get 15% off your entire order. Hilarious, all-natural, eco-friendly products for bath, body, and mental well-being. Pure products, pure genius, it's Bubble Genius.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
And that's the name of our show, but it should actually be the Bubble Genius presents the Bob and Elvis Show.
Better get Buzz back on the phone.
Yeah, Buzz. Speaking of Buzz, health update for Buzz from the Mike O'Mara Show, which is the other podcast you ought to be downloading and listening to, the Mike O'Mara Show on iTunes.
Yeah.
He evidently, we talk about dodging a bullet. Buzz had, basically, he was walking around with pneumonia for 3 months.
Jesus.
Yeah. And he ended up being hospitalized and put into basically a coma.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah. And then they found a mass on his lung, which there's a 99% chance of that mass being cancer, and his wasn't.
Wow.
And you want to talk about, and now he's fine. Now he's fine and dandy, and I was corresponding via Facebook with him the other day, and yeah, he's great. He's great, feeling much better, and happy and, you know, ready to move on. I think he's itching to move out of the Washington D.C. area. But you didn't hear that.
Oh,
from
really?
Me. Yeah.
Yeah,
but I mean, he'll continue doing it. Yeah, I mean, he'll continue doing the Mike O'Mara show, and I think all of them on the show are realizing that they can do the show from anywhere. So
yeah.
why all be in that living room? And it's literally the best podcast next to this one, of course, mm-hmm. that is available on iTunes.
So. Buzz is from my neck of the woods originally, Kansas City, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. He's from Kansas. That's right. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have any trace of Kansas in him, other than he's got sort of this aw shucks Midwestern kind of attitude about him.
Yeah. I remember the first time I ever saw Buzz thinking, that is not anything what I thought Buzz
yeah,
like.
Right.
Before the internet, you know, before you could see people easily.
Yeah.
I went to staked out some area at some bar in Fairfax somewhere. And I was like, hey, who's that guy? And they're like, oh, that's Buzz. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It's not what I thought Buzz looked like.
Yeah, it looks like G.I. Joe with real life hair and beard. That's what he looked like. That's how Don Geronimo always described him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean that's kind of what he looks like. Yeah, he used to have the real life hair and beard. Now he's got short hair and no beard. And
people age.
But he's a good guy, and he does a lot of voice work too. So you probably will recognize his voice from various commercials.
Huzzah!
Indeed. But speaking of commercials, you hear and I played a bit of Full Metal Jacket at the top of the show. Arlie Ermey was, I don't care necessarily that Arlie Ermey is a wingnut. I knew he was a wingnut, and I knew he had ridiculous points of view on politics. But the reason I underscore this story is because it so emphasizes just the stupidity of just right-wing idiots. Yeah. Because, I mean, what he said was, and I'm going to try to play the audio. This might not sound right, but this is from Alan Colmes' website. But
I would like to salute the United States Marine Corps.
See that voice? I just hear that voice. I say, choke yourself. Not with my hand, numbnuts. Right?
Yeah. Hard to take seriously right out of the box.
Very hard to take seriously. And of course, and he was our Sorkin references constantly. He was the judge in A Few Good Men.
What?
Arlie Ermey, yeah.
No.
Yes.
Not in the movie.
In the movie, yes.
No, there's a black guy who was the judge in A Few Good Men.
I don't know. I'm going to look this up.
It was not Arlie Ermey. I just watched it the other night. It's a black guy. Remember, he goes, I'm quite certain I've earned it. When Jessup's bitching about...
Oh, right. Who does
the big round-faced black guy.
Yeah.
Little mustache. I'm quite certain I've earned it. He's good. I don't know. It's a character actor. I don't know who it was, but it wasn't Arlie Ermey.
Then Arlie Ermey was the judge in some other movie. Maybe Murder in the First, was it?
Don't know.
Now it's killing me. Now I got to find out what...
To the IMDb machine.
To the IMDb. That's where I am right now.
You know what I was watching last night? I don't know if you've ever seen it, but Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Oh yeah,
that's a great movie.
Yeah.
Oh my god,
Sam Rockwell as Chuck Barris.
Yeah, brilliant. Could not look and act more like Chuck Barris, and I just want to know when he dies. Somebody's got to come out with the truth about that. Like, how much of that is just total bullshit? I think probably all of it.
Yeah.
There's no way that guy was killing people for the CIA, but that's a great movie.
Yeah, it is.
And just the things that George Clooney is that CIA guy with that broom mustache, you know, and with the dating game when the camera pans over and the nerd wins because he's got all the good answers, but the other two are Brad Pitt and Matt Damon. Oh my god, I laughed.
Yeah, yeah,
laughed my ass off. That's a funny movie.
And did you take that? I mean, do you think Chuck Barris was really like a hitman for the CIA?
No way in hell.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No way in hell. I mean, the movie starts out by telling you that this guy is a consummate liar. I mean, I think he's Chuck Barris. He can do whatever he wants.
Arlie Ermey was the judge in Murder in the First.
Yes.
So my second guess was the correct one.
Yeah, I love when you're wrong and I'm right, especially about movies.
And the very liberal movie, Murder in the First, by the way.
Yes, indeed.
By the way.
So. Was that, who else was in that?
Christian Slater and Kevin Bacon.
That's where you got it wrong, because Kevin Bacon.
And Gary Oldman, just the biggest rat bastard warden since Shawshank Redemption.
But Gary Oldman's awesome.
He was actually worse. Gary Oldman as the warden of Alcatraz than anything that was in Shawshank Redemption, easily.
Gary Oldman is going to, Gary Oldman has been cast in, as George Smiley in the remake of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. That is awesome.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
I think the other really creepy Gary Oldman character that I like is when he plays that congressman in The Contender, where he's just he's a senator?
I think, wasn't he? He's way too powerful to be. Shelley?
Yeah, Shelley.
To the IMDb. That's a great movie. I love that movie.
Okay, now I'm going to have to look that up. See, now we're twisting right into the... We're going to connect this somehow while we've already hit Kevin Bacon, so...
You guys got to go out and fucking check that movie out, The Contender, if you've never seen it.
The Contender is just a classic, classic movie.
I mean, even though it I mean, talk about... It one-ups Sorkin political smugness by being... I mean, the political smugness at the end... is painful, but still just a fucking great movie.
Yeah.
Just
well, it's movie. He's credited
it doesn't
as
say it just says
Shelley Runyon. Yeah. It doesn't say so. Congressman Runyon.
Yeah. I thought he was a senator.
Yeah. Well, because Christian Slater is a congressman and he goes up to.
Yeah, no, you're right. It says, congressman. You're right.
All right.
So. Congressman. So, yeah.
What That's the hell? Movie. How did we have? Oh yeah. Arlie Ermey. So here's what.
Yeah.
I was playing the clip of Arlie Ermey.
Yeah, and then you said something wrong, and I had to check you. I won't
Gary
let
Oldman.
Go. I'm like
that's
a
right.
dog with a bird in its mouth.
Absolutely. But we both fucked up last week. I forget what it was. Some other movie detail. Oh, it was William Sanderson.
Yeah, that was yours.
Yeah. Well, we both. Neither of us got that one right.
Since 1775, they have been defending this country and doing quite a nice job of it, I might add. We celebrated our 235th birthday last month, for those of you who don't know.
All right, this is, he's just...
Was he an actual Marine?
Yeah, he was. And in fact, in this thing, in the video, he's wearing all the regalia. Yeah, he's got the sort of... But he's wearing, like, the brown leather fuzzy fighter jacket thing. Here we go. Let's see. Go ahead here. Here we go.
And right now our main mission at the moment is Toys for Tots, and you all know that, right?
Is it a Toys for Tots
problem this year? The economy really sucks.
There we go.
Now, I hate to point fingers at anybody, but the present administration probably has a lot to do with that.
Sounds like Sergeant Hartman's a little drunk. But
yeah, and starting to sound a little old. I mean, it really not... Like, maybe he just suffered a very mild stroke.
Yeah.
And the way I see it, they're not going to quit doing it until they bring this country to its knees. So I think we should all rise up, and we should stop this administration from what they're doing, because they're destroying this country.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're driving us into bankruptcy.
What?
The little, the little plastic... toy soldier from Toy Story is so bitter in me.
Yeah, that's right. He says, I mean, here's the nut of it here.
They're driving us into bankruptcy so that they can impose socialism on us, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Uh-huh, yes. You know, that's why I want to bring this up, because it's that ongoing fallacy. Mm-hmm. It's the myth that somehow the Obama administration and the Democrats are deliberately trying to bankrupt the country, which is an absolute lie.
Well, it's not even a lie. It's such an absurd from a political. It doesn't even mesh with their other lies, with their other bullshit about big government. It's all about power, and it's all about takeover, and all about control. It's like if those two things could coexist, maybe it would make sense. But an utter destruction of the country, utter bankruptcy, and all it. The two things just can't coexist. They're just utterly mutually exclusive. They just their sound bites are colliding now.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
The
and people just yay, woo!
The second term of the previous administration, which Arlie Ermey campaigned for. Arlie Ermey was very out there about campaigning for George W. Bush in 2004, McCain in 2008. But George W. Bush from 2004 to 2008 increased the debt as a percentage of GDP, by 20%. Okay? That's the highest increase in debt to GDP since Roosevelt, which was 24%. Well, Truman was 21%. But since then, it was George W. Bush increased the debt by 20%. 20%. Arlie Ermey campaigned for this guy. And he's on there. He's bitching about the current president trying to bankrupt the country. The current president reduced the deficit by $122 billion. And I've said that over and over again, whether it's here on the show or on the blog, because no one else is saying it, not even the Democrats. And that pisses me off. They ought to be. They ought to be, because they cut the deficit by record. No, the deficit has not been reduced by that amount ever. Ever, not once. And so, fuck you, Sergeant Hartman. Now, choke yourself.
Choke yourself. Right? Your own hand.
Good Lord. And, you know, again, it's not... we really shouldn't give a shit what, you know, Arlie Ermey or any of the other celebrity wingnuts, Kelsey Grammer or whoever, what they have to say. But when it... again, repeats this ongoing myth, it's important to nip it in the bud.
Nip it!
As Barney Fife likes to say.
Oh, I love Barney Fife. Love me some Andy Griffith.
We're approaching the two-hour mark. Wow. With the length of these shows. Today is, we're an hour and 35 minutes in.
Zing!
So I think we are nearing, with the Bubble Genius Presents the Bob and Ella Show, doing two-hour weekly shows.
Might as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but there you go. And hopefully, you know, the next show won't be broadcast from, like a underneath the counter at Starbucks at Philadelphia International Airport, because I'll be blasted in by snow throughout the weekend and several days later. Like, what happened to the New York people? But, so we'll see what happens. But we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. You fudge with us, you fudge with the best. Next Thursday on schedule. Not Wednesday like this week, but next Thursday as usual.
Indeed.
Hey, take care, everybody.
Douchebags!